This podcast is produced by Linear B Group, the brand, content, and account-based marketing agency for the private capital industry.
You're listening to Fund Shack. I'm Ross Butler, and today I'm speaking with Robert Knorr, managing partner at Mid Europa, which pioneered private equity investing in Central Europe before the year 2000. Robert joined the London office in 1999 and became managing partner in 2007. Earlier this month, he won the Real Deals Award for private equity investment leader for his pivotal role in the development of Central European private equity.
Robert, welcome to Fund Shack. I wanted to start by asking you, what's the difference between doing private equity in Central Europe, which is a large region, and somewhere like, you know, Western Europe or North America?
Well, let me say, I mean, you said I started together with, you know, a very small team of people back in 99, raising a fund for Central Europe. And not only wanted to raise a fund in 99, there were already, you know, a few smaller funds for the region at that time, but we wanted to raise a relatively large buyout fund. And the idea was to raise around $500 million to basically buy companies and do a buyout business in Central Europe, which was, you know, quite, you know, a new thing to do. The region emerged from what used to be a domination of Soviets, you know, Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary, just a decade before. We're still under, you know, or on the other side of the Berlin Wall. And what we wanted to do, what we, you know, saw was coming, is those countries ultimately getting into the European Union, getting into NATO, becoming again part of, you know, the Western world. And we would, you know, basically help that happen. We would accelerate that happen. We would find opportunities which would, you know, on one side, bring good returns to our investors. On the other side, you know, we had that mission because all of us, you know, come from Central Europe. I myself am Croatian, from Croatia. You know, my colleagues are from Poland, from Romania, and other countries in the region. And we really wanted to do something for that region. We want to participate in this big effort of bringing the region back into the mainstream, you know, developed world. Central Europe is different from, you know, and sometimes confused with Eastern Europe. And Eastern Europe, I would say, would be, you know, Ukraine, Russia, you know, former Soviet republics like Kazakhstan and others. For a very long time, people were confusing what we were actually doing, where we were investing. And, you know, our mission was to actually focus on Central Europe. You know, these are the countries, you know, three Baltic countries, Poland, Czech, Slovakia, Hungary, Croatia, Slovenia, Romania, and Bulgaria. That's where we invest. These are all NATO countries and these are all EU countries and progressively, you know, more and more integrated into the EU.
So I guess it's ancient history now, but it's interesting your choice to raise a buyout fund. I might have thought that you would have gone for growth capital. But at the same time, I guess there was the Russian experience of, like, the oligarchy power grab of major industrial assets, which were effectively kind of like shady buyouts as well. Where did the strategic impetus come from at that time to go for buyouts?
Well, it came, as I was explaining, from the belief that then, you know, became reality that these countries will, you know, progressively and gradually become a mainstream Europe. Maybe we're still not fully there, but, you know, very, very close to being there.
I guess behind my question, though, is was it in retrospect too early for buyouts or did it work out?
Well, I can tell you, you know, when we ultimately raised the fund and we had 500 million, we all started traveling to the countries of Central Europe. And I remember I would go to, you know, Czech Republic or to Hungary or, you know, smaller country like Croatia. And I would tell people, you know, we were looking for opportunities that basically would result in us investing maybe 30, 40 million of equity ticket. They were looking at me and thinking, is this guy nuts? I mean, that size just don't exist. What are you talking about? That you know, you will never find something like that. So it was very hard back in 99, 2000, you know, finding companies that had an enterprise value of, let's say, 80, 100, 150 million, that's what we were looking for, was not easy.
So how have things evolved then?
Well, first of all, you know, the first fund was a little bit of an infrastructure focus because that was where you could find size. We did a lot of telecoms. We did quite some cable TV. So what was coming, it was internet, it was new services, new technology, but for that you needed infrastructure. You needed, you know, fiber, you needed, you know, cable networks, you know, whatever else. You know, we were investing in towers, telecom towers. Those days, you know, we our fund was a buyout fund. As I said, we needed to deliver private equity returns. But in those years, you could deliver by investing in what is today, you know, plain infrastructure. You could deliver private equity returns.
Yeah, great risk return trade off, then, I assume.
Yes, absolutely. And it was innovation. It was something that, you know, it did not exist. Mm. You would invest, for example, in a cable network that was, you know, having 10 channels. So your equity story would be you were, you know, expanding that into, you know, offering another 50 channels, and on top you would be introducing internet, and all of this resulted in growth rates of, you know, 20-30%, and in returns of, you know, 3-4 times your money. So it was, you know, infrastructure investing in a boosted private equity return environment.
Okay, and so that was 25 years ago, roughly.
Yes.
How have things, to what extent have things changed? Has Central Europe caught up with Western Europe? What types of opportunities are you seeing now compared to then?
Well, first of all, I would, you know, invite you and everyone else who haven't been to Central Europe for many years or haven't been at all to go and to see how it looks, first of all. And for those who have been maybe, you know, 20 or, you know, 15 years ago, how it has changed. These countries, these cities, you know, if you go to Warsaw, if you go to Budapest, if you go to Prague, if you go to Zagreb, this is like Western Europe. You know, people live in a very similar way. Services have progressed. You shop in, you know, modern supermarkets in which we invest. You go to private healthcare companies in which we invest that, you know, look like Western Europe, sometimes better, because, you know, you almost kind of, you know, you invest in something that did not exist. So you're not trying to improve a Victorian building in, you know, in Harley Street. You're building a new building, somewhere in Warsaw, for example. So this sometimes looks very, very good. And, people have started living in a very similar way. The wealth has increased. The people have more spending power. You are getting, you know, GDP growth rates that are high in Western Europe, yet, you know, have this catch-up effect of, you know, many industries, particularly those in which we invest, growing faster because, you know, they're catching up with, with services in, service levels in Western Europe. People have the money to pay for them. Corporates, you know, also foreign corporates and domestic corporates have, you know, more firepower. So, you know, things are happening. You know, there is a good atmosphere. There is, you know, an ability to invest. There is more wealth, and there is this catch-up effect and this desire to, you know, of the population in Central Europe to just live their lives in a similar way as people do in Western Europe.
And a strong entrepreneurial culture. Because I guess you cover a huge geographic region, as you said at the start, like almost from the Baltics almost to the Mediterranean. So that, how do you, what's kind of the percentage breakdown in terms of the countries that you've invested in, what your preferences are?
Yes, I can tell you that when you look at, you know, investment areas in Europe, and Central Europe is these days absolutely one of them. Maybe, you know, more of a newcomer, but, you know, absolutely an investment area of Europe. It's a very big area. It's approximately 120 million people. It's the biggest one. If you look at the Nordics, DACH, UK, you know, if you take it as one, you know, one region, it's the biggest one. Also in terms of GDP is, you know, quite considerable. We are talking about approximately 2 trillion GDP in these countries, which is, you know, comparable to Italy, let's say. It's maybe smaller than Germany. It's smaller than the UK, but, you know, quite considerable. What you do have as a big difference is that still the investment, you know, generally the FDI, but particularly private equity investment or private capital investment is significantly, significantly smaller. You know, you're talking about, you know, an investment, private equity investment, I think we looked at 2013 to 2022 of, you know, 30 billion compared to maybe 90 in the Nordics to compared to 200 billion in the UK.
Why is this so little?
Because it's a newcomer. I mean, we looked at, for example, in countries who are closer to that region, for example, Spain and Italy. And if you look at Spain and Italy, you know, 10, even 5, particularly 15 years ago, this is how they looked. You know, the private equity penetration was very, very low. And if you, you know, if you ask someone, you know, 15 years ago, what about Italy or Spain? They wouldn't even have an office there. They would not think of that, you know, countries as, you know, an investment area for them. Now, the big difference between Italy and Spain and Central Europe that, you know, in our view, or in my personal view, you know, barriers to entry are higher because, you know, it's a big area, but it's a fragmented area. You know, there are a number of countries, there are a number of languages. It's not as easy as, you know, for a fund to just, you know, put there a Madrid or Milan office with, you know, 7 Italian or 7 Spaniards. And here you are and you conquered the country. Even if you, you know, open an office and, you know, some of, you know, big funds have tried to open an office in Warsaw and try to invest in the whole of the region, that doesn't really work. You know, Poland is just one of the countries, is the biggest one, is the most important one, but just one of those countries representing approximately maybe 30-40% of the overall, you know, population of Central Europe, maybe a little bit higher in terms of, you know, the GDP contribution. But you know, the fragmentation, the languages, you know, different countries, they're all in the EU, so they are aligned in terms of regulation and so on. But still, you know, there are some differences. So you do need to have boots on the ground. You need to have local offices as we do. You need to speak those languages. And I think that's where our advantage comes from.
So where are your offices?
We have an office, a big one in Warsaw. We have an office in Bucharest, one in Prague, one in Zagreb. We also have an office in London. That's actually where I'm based.
Right. And does your where you invest roughly correspond with the size of the economies in the region?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, when we look at our past five funds, we're now at our fifth fund, approximately half of each fund went into Poland-related investments. Not always Poland, but let's say a Polish company that operates on, you know, on a regional or European basis, or maybe sometimes globally, because we invest not exclusively in Central Europe, we invest in Central European companies. And sometimes that means that, you know, it's, you know, much more of a pan-European investment. And so 50% would be Poland. I think these days, you know, Romania has stepped up, maybe, you know, 20-25% would be Romania. And then the rest, everything else, which includes Czech, Hungary, Slovenia, Croatia, Bulgaria, the Baltic countries.
So tell me a little bit about investing in Poland. I find it a fascinating country. We have a lot of Polish workers in the UK, incredibly entrepreneurial, spirited and hardworking, and lots of companies outsource many operations to Poland. Now, what's your experience of private equity investing in the region?
Poland is an amazing country, has an amazing entrepreneurial culture. Has, you know, a very, very large number of companies, increasingly sizable companies, which, you know, for Mid-Europa is an interesting, you know, and welcome development. People have an incredible work ethic, work a lot, work very well. You know, you have loyal employees, and also, you know, in some cases we've invested and tested, you know, either a franchise model or an agent model where you actually give more power to entrepreneurs or the entrepreneurial culture, where you actually incentivize people, not just paying them a salary, but, you know, incentivize them on the profit or, you know, volumes they realize, on any other KPI that makes sense, works very, very well in Poland. I think, you know, if you know Poles, and there are now less of them in the UK than there used to be, but I think they were applying the same, you know, work ethic in the UK, and it's actually in a way pity that, you know, many of them left.
Yes. And so presumably your deal flow is from those types of entrepreneurial growth businesses rather than, let's say, corporate carve-outs or family-owned businesses?
We do a bit of everything. So first of all, what I need to tell you is that we are not, you know, any longer just a regional investor. I would say we obviously, you know, are very linked to the region. That's our big angle and, you know, our advantage. We, you know, continue to use that. But over the years, we have evolved into more of a sector-focused investor. So we do four sectors. We invest in consumer, we invest in healthcare, we invest in business services and technology. So these are four sectors. We're also very much a thematic investor. We like internationalization. So we like to, you know, back ambitious founders, ambitious management teams, take them across the border, and very often on a pan-European basis. I think that's, you know, something that MidEuropa can play very, very well with our international presence and connectivity. We very much back sustainability. We, you know, think the region is maybe lagging a little bit behind some of the more developed countries in terms of, you know, energy transition, in terms of, you know, overall, you know, sustainability is something that MidEuropa promotes very, very strongly. We, for example, are very focused on digitalization because that's something that, you know, the region has a fantastic potential. There is a huge, huge talent pool of very well educated, technically very well educated students and then workers that, by the way, many of the American tech companies are tapping and, you know, building their centers. You know, Google has huge, you know, huge workforce in Poland. Actually considers Poland, they told us, as a Silicon Valley of Europe, where they actually like to be and like to invest. So for our business services and technology verticals, we see a huge potential in Poland in particular, but generally across Central Europe.
So just on the international point, my Western Europe bias is that sometimes I look at these regions like Poland, for example, and I think, well, if you've got a great German business, then, hey, why not have factories in Poland? But to what extent is the reverse happening and you're seeing Polish or whatever, Romanian companies, expanding into Western Europe and beyond?
What has been happening, you know, a lot of what we call nearshoring of manufacturing, which still exists, and I think you kind of referred to that, particularly, for example, car manufacturing. You know, most of German cars these days are produced in Slovakia or in Poland or in Hungary. What we are now and increasingly seeing is nearshoring of services. Because of this talent pool that I described to you and, you know, an increasing willingness of people to stay in their home country and not travel abroad, and actually technology allowing that to be and allowing that to happen, you have an increasing nearshoring of particularly technology and business services, be it software development or, you know, anything to do with IT services. So what we see is an increasing number of companies that look like, or they actually are, Western European companies with their headquarters, let's say in the UK or in Germany or in France, but what we call delivery or engineers who actually deliver the service are based in Poland, are based in even Romania. You know, we have now a number of, you know, companies that deliver their IT service or their software development service out of Romania into a UK company. We actually had a target in the UK that ultimately we did not end up buying that had all of their engineers in Moldova. Moldova is not a usual, it's not, you know, one of our core countries where we invest. But just to tell you how a UK company delivering software development, IT services to UK companies, actually all of their engineers were based in Moldova.
So this is rapidly changing as well, I assume, since 2020, this drive towards, you know, digitization and...
Yes, I think what has, you know, massively changed with COVID, we all know, is that, you know, delivery of something like a service that can be done digitally, that can be done, you know, from your home country, maybe not necessarily from your home, because most of these companies do have offices, but they're based in Central Europe, allows you, you know, two things. First, obviously, the cost base is lower in those countries than in Western Europe. The talent pool is bigger, and the quality of service, you know, what we actually see in these cases is, you know, this pools of people are based in one single city in Romania or in Poland. So there is this kind of camaraderie, you know, they work together, they know each other maybe from student days, they, you know, innovate together. So there is this kind of innovation center of, you know, talent pool that exists in that country. And actually services are sold into Western Europe, where, you know, you have a bigger pool of corporates who buy those services.
And when you come along as a private equity firm, what's the general reception in the business and kind of employee communities?
In Central Europe?
Yes.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, maybe not as many of your listeners have heard of Mid-Europa, but I can assure you, if you go to Central Europe and you mention our name, most of the people who do any, you know, business will know about us. Maybe they will not know about some, you know, big asset managers that everyone in London knows about, but they will know about Mid-Europa. And this is because simply we've done so many deals. We've invested in so many companies because, you know, we across these 25 years have come, you know, have worked with so many management teams. So there are so many brands, there are so many people, there are so many management teams who know about Mid-Europa, have had an experience with Mid-Europa. You know, there was a business that we owned, that we sold, that now it's thriving, you know, under different ownership. So we have clearly made a name, and we have a huge connectivity in that region. We have very often these days, this is not, you know, when we started, but, you know, these days, founders, management teams, ambitious, you know, companies contacting us and telling us, look, we would like you to invest with us because we have an ambitious plan.
Mm. Do you welcome that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We, you know, we are obviously, as many private equity firms, we are very selective. We're trying to find what we are looking for. We, you know, have a very sector driven and thematic driven investment approach. But when we are approached, this is a very positive thing. We clearly want to see what this is all about. And sometimes it does lead to us getting very, very interested.
What are your more typical sources of deal flow? Is it a well intermediated market?
Look, I think it is a combination. And previously you asked me, you know, what kind of deals we do. We've done corporate carve-out. So there is any other country, any other region that, you know, has gone through, you know, quite some development phases. Is, you know, there are corporates, Western corporates who have, you know, invested in Central Europe and then changed the strategy. For example, I can tell you, you know, 3 years ago, Sage UK, which is a big software company, had what I would call a little bit of an unloved subsidiary in Poland. And although, you know, we knew the company, we quite liked the company, we didn't think Sage would, you know, ever divest. Yet, you know, we kind of tried, we, you know, a little bit talked to them, we talked to the management team. At some point it emerged that, yeah, they considered potentially, you know, disposing of that subsidiary. Well, we jumped on it, we bought it, and together with the management team, a fantastic CEO and his team, managed to, you know, make some quite, first, you know, executed the carve out, which was not easy, but then make some, you know, very significant changes to how the business was run, made a few M&A acquisitions, and only two and a half years later, which was, you know, in 2023, a software, you know, specialized private equity firm, Axel KKR, came along, you know, saw what we did, quite liked it, wanted to buy the company, yet appreciated that, you know, we would be a very welcome partner. So we crafted a deal where they bought a 70% stake, we stayed with 30%. In 2.5 years, we got recognition, quite a big one, for what, you know, has been achieved. And yet, you know, we keep a stake, and we'll enjoy what we believe will be, you know, quite an interesting journey for this company going forward. What this company does, they provide accounting and payroll software for small and medium-sized companies in Poland. And this is a sector that is booming, as you can expect, because, you know, there are many companies, you know, they obviously need to deal with, you know, a relatively complex payroll, you know, the tax and so on, that all of that is taken care by that software that the company offers. And just as we were agreeing the deal with Axel KKR, we already secured an acquisition in Romania. So the company is expanding beyond the Polish borders.
What's the name of the company?
Symphonia.
Yes. Another deal that you did recently, or exited, I wanted to talk about, is Profi in Romania. This looks like quite an exceptional deal, a supermarket. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I have to tell you that 2023, which was not in a great year for deal making, for private equity in general globally, was actually, for Mid-Europa, an exceptional year for exits. We had what we call 6 liquidity events, so which means not full exits, but some of them, you know, partial exits, but 6 of them. And we returned quite a substantial amount of capital back to our LPs in a year that they probably did not expect it. So we were ourselves very, very pleased. We worked very, very hard for this to work. And as you mentioned, Profi was one of those exits and probably contributed to almost half of this overall total that we returned. So quite a big deal. This is a company that when we invested back in 2017 and we actually bought it from a smaller peer of ours, a private equity firm that operates in Central Europe, that managed to grow Profi into a quite a considerable force in the grocery retail market, yet one of the many and facing competition from some significant players already, Aldeles, Carrefour, Auchan, Reve, they were all in the market. So the market had a lot of white space, a lot of, new openings to be made.
So it's a very fragmented supermarket, grocery market in Romania?
At that stage, and things have a little bit changed over the last 6 years, but still in 2017 was quite a fragmented market, not a very competitive market because, as I said, quite a lot of white space. So you could be opening stores. There were, still vast areas of Romania that were not covered even by modern retail, and people are still buying on open markets and so on. So it had quite a lot, yet the country was progressing, the wealth was increasing, and clearly the need for these types of services was there. So
and
we recognized that.
Sounds like a mix of foreign and domestic as well.
Quite a lot of foreign. I think Profi was probably one of the very few domestically grown supermarket chains with a very good proposition, a supermarket with not too many products, which means not too much complexity, with a price or low price formula, yet not a discounter. So there were already Lidl and Kaufland in the market that were promoting, hard discount formula. There were, higher end hypermarkets and supermarkets like Carrefour. And, we kind of found a niche, somewhere in the middle, promoting low price accessibility, but yet choice that, maybe hard discounters had less of. And what we, we took over a store network of approximately 500 stores. When we now sold to Aldeles 1,700 stores, so an incredible growth in store network, an incredible growth in revenue. When we took over, it was approximately 500, 600 million of revenue. We sold it with 2.5 billion of revenue. So an amazing growth over the last 5-6 years. And a big recognition from who ultimately bought it out of quite a competitive process. We had a few players in the process in a very difficult year, when it was really, really hard to run M&A, let alone in Romania, let alone of a size of, 1.2, 1.3 billion that we thought we would be achieving here. Ultimately, we sold to Aldeles at 1.3 billion EV, quite, a standout deal, not only for Romania, not only for Central Europe, but generally for Europe, because last year, as I said, was not a great year for exits. And, doing something like this was quite an achievement.
Okay, so this is clearly a phenomenal deal in many ways, not least because the LPs badly needed money and you gave it to them when they needed it. But what I want to talk a little bit more about is how you managed to grow the business. So you tripled the number of retail stores. So how did that rollout go? I mean, was it a very strong management team with M&A experience, presumably?
This is when you get, an existing management team who is locally smart, knows what they're doing, with an investor like us who has done this before. And we've done this before in Poland, where we invested in a store network called Żabka. A fantastic success, that one also, above a billion exit for us to a fund. We sold it to another bigger fund, a private equity fund in that case. In Żabka, when we entered, they were already opening, 100, 150 stores a year. We managed to accelerate that to 300 stores a year, opened every year. We call this a store factory. So basically, you need to have a team, you need to get them trained. How did we do that? We actually brought, not that we know it all, but, we use experts. We use, in this case, retail experts. The advantage for us investing in Central Europe is that you don't really have to invent hot water. You look at what worked in Western Europe.
Yeah.
And who did it in Western Europe. And very often we get those same experts who worked with many of our, you know, Western European peers who've done a successful, you know, full cycle investment, let's say in this case, in grocery retail, with whom you can work, who comes, who see what you've got, who tell you how this could be done. And then you look at the management team and you talk to them and you see if they can execute it or they need some reinforcements. Maybe you hire some people from outside. You get, you know, some experts to work on the advisory basis. You know, our operating team from Mid-Europa gets involved. And the result is that in case of Profi, you know, we accelerated their, you know, 30, 40 openings a year, 200, 150 openings a year. Profi was opening less stores than Żabka because their stores are bigger. You know, Żabka is a convenience store network with approximately 100 square meter, yep, you know, average store. Profi has much bigger stores.
Right. So you must have had a very high level of conviction is what I'd say, because if you came along and said, well, we want to increase the number of stores by 50%, that would sound ambitious. But 250%, that sounds highly ambitious. And you're increasing your risk, presumably, when you do that. So what underscored your level of confidence that this level of rollout was going to, you'd be able to maintain profitability, I guess, and that you weren't going to get too large too quickly?
Yes, look, I think there are many, you know, things and many considerations here. I think first, the conviction, there needs to be a conviction about the environment. I think we had a strong conviction that Romania has, you know, made some fundamental changes, how this country works, that, you know, the environment is conducive to developing businesses, and that ultimately, if we build something very large, we'll be able to exit. Because that's also a consideration. You know, if you're investing in a country that, you know, many, many investors are not familiar with, and you try to deliver to them something that's $1 billion, $2 billion or something very large, you know, you may get resistance. People may get a little bit, you know, difficult. Let's say in this case, in this particular case, we worked with strategic investors. You know, this can get to a board where people just don't know about Romania, uncomfortable that, you know, a Western European company would be investing, not generally investing, but investing, let's say, $1 billion or $2 billion. So if you're proposing to yourself something like that, you need to have a conviction that where you're investing will, if not today, in 2, 3, 4, whatever years time when you want to exit, will be at the stage where a number of potential buyers will be interested and will be able to execute a transaction of that level.
So excuse my ignorance, but stock market flotation for something like that was not...
Romania in that respect is not yet there. Right. Poland, it is. You know, in Poland, I can tell you, you know, we made an investment in a fantastic company called Allegro, which is basically the Amazon of Poland, an absolute leader in e-commerce in Poland. That investment was very large when we entered. So we made it together with two of our friends, two of other funds, Sinven and Premira. So three of us invested in what was, you know, 3.3 billion euro EV entry. Well, in 2020, we floated this company on the Warsaw Stock Exchange at the market cap of 10 billion euro. So you can do things like that. Yeah. You can certainly do it in Poland. Poland has a liquid and working stock market. Bucharest maybe will be getting there, but it's not yet there.
Okay, so back to Profi. So with Romania, you have to be more, I guess, targeted with regards to who could potentially buy something of this scale if we build it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we just, you know, did this deal, Profi, that I described to you. We own another fantastic company in Romania that I would say is of a similar size. That is a healthcare, private healthcare company, an absolute leader in private healthcare in Romania. The company is called Regina Maria. And, you know, I can tell you it's growing fantastically. It's very profitable. And the market is there to, you know, to grow it further. So it's a fantastic company. So Romania for us is delivering some very, very nice companies.
It's like consumer healthcare business.
It's basically, you know, what the company provides is clinics, generic clinics and hospitals.
Right. Yeah. So there's with deals of this sort, there is, let's say, the technical aspects. So you brought in international experts with regards to the rollout of the store franchise and so on. But presumably underlying any conviction you have is a much more context-specific cultural understanding of what people are going to be receptive towards. And particularly, I think, with grocery retailing, it's notoriously difficult to do internationally because of this cultural element. And so, I mean, I guess I know the answer, but how did you get comfortable that the Romanian consumer was going to buy?
Yeah, I can tell you that, you know, there are these cultural differences that I think we are a little bit attuned to in Central Europe, but there are also similarities. For example, you know, Poland as a grocery retail market is closer to Germany, you know, quite attuned to, you know, discounts, to, you know, pricing. Romania, not that they're not sensitive to pricing, but it's more of a Latin type of market. So closer to Italy, closer to France, much more linked to brands, much more trusting brands, not, you know, private label. We have introduced private label and it's growing in Profi and some other store networks, but much more reluctance than, you know, in, let's say, Poland. So you do have this kind of cultural differences that you do need to be, you know, attuned to. You know, our management team in Profi, when we arrived, you know, they were very familiar with the Spanish market. They were very familiar with the Portuguese market. We were wondering, but why is that? You know, why don't you guys go to, you know, France? Why don't you go to Germany? And the expectation is these are not markets that, you know, are similar to Romania. We do want to see markets that are similar to Romania. So they already recognize that. However, our, you know, management team is a Romanian management team. And one thing I wanted to mention to you, when we started back in 1999, the region was at a very different development point, and we had to bring many, many more expats, you know, managers from the UK, from Germany, from France, to run our companies. Why was that? Because the region at that time was only 10 years out of communism, and you had very good technical managers, very good production managers, but not people who are good in sales, not people who are good in marketing. These were skills that were not developed during the communist time. So a lot of importing of the management teams. I can tell you, you know, these days, almost none of our managers or CEOs are expats. A vast majority, I mean, not exclusive, but vast majority are local managers. And the advantage you have there is that those management teams, those CEOs know the local market. They know what the local consumer, what the local patient wants and needs. They understand the vibes of the market. And that's very, very important.
Mm. Where do you see the region going from here? And what are your prognosis for 2024, 2025 and further out?
Well, first of all, 2024, as in many other markets, we do expect that the deal making will accelerate. Both the exit and the deployment side of the deal making, simply because, you know, things have normalized, the macro is a little bit better. Obviously, some of the geopolitical problems have not gone away, but they've somehow, you know, there, and despite them, you know, things are getting back to normal. Mm-hmm. And I think also the gap between, you know, buyers and sellers have narrowed, or in some cases is closed. So we see much more interest, much more activity. And on some of our assets that we have not even considered yet an exit, you know, we are getting, you know, inquiries. Some of the deals that we have been nurturing for some, you know, even some cases is years, are somehow coming into, you know, a stage where people want to talk seriously. So there will be more deal activity in 24, and I would expect in 25. What I expect in terms of the region? Well, we started, and we, you know, at the beginning, we were talking a little bit about the statistics and low penetration of private equity in the region. I expect this to continue to change and to continue to accelerate. I expect the region to get closer and closer to Western Europe, which in some cases is getting a little bit saturated. So here you still have quite a lot of, you know, green field and, you know, new companies, new founders who are looking for investment, who are hungry for investment, who have the ability but need help in expanding and growing. One also, let's say, good thing about Central Europe is that you don't have a long heritage of family businesses and passing ownership to children, something that maybe some of our peers are fighting with in Northern Italy or, you know, Bavaria or some of the, you know, very developed part of Europe, but where it's hard to get, you know, private equity investment into what is, you know, tightly held family business. That's not the tradition of Central Europe. You know, Central Europe, as you know, at some point was, you know, governed more on a, you know, communist side. So what then emerged was, you know, entrepreneurialism that is, you know, now very active, yet, you know, those entrepreneurs are looking for professional capital, and that's where we come in.
Mm. Do you see kind of longer range, the region getting to a point where it's kind of, it's no longer in the shadow of Western Europe to some degree, because it does feel that way, but there's no real fundamental reason why it shouldn't become a real kind of economic powerhouse in its own right?
Look, I don't know whether it becomes its own economic powerhouse or simply is, you know, an important contributor within the EU market. It doesn't really change for us as an investor. Mm. And I think it will be vibrant. It will be, you know, needing investment. It will be growing. There will be opportunities. Mm. So I don't think we're necessarily seeking to make, you know, the region a powerhouse. We are seeking to, you know, make it an important part of what is, you know, an increasingly integrated EU market. And when you actually look at where Mid Europa is investing these days, it is investing in the eastern part of the EU. This is not some kind of separate region. Yeah. This is not something detached or something different. It's, you know, an increasingly integrated part of one market.
Great. Before we close, we spent some time talking about Poland and Romania. Would you like to comment on any of the other or smaller countries that you're looking at and whether anything interests you there?
Look, there are different markets. I can tell you, for example, for Czech Republic, we say the Czech Republic, which is a fantastic market, a large market, very vibrant market, yet we say it's a bit of a Switzerland of Central Europe. And why we say so? Because you get very little private equity out of Switzerland, and it is a very vibrant market. Similar to Czech Republic. And why is that? Because there is a lot of domestic money. There is a lot of domestic money. There are family offices, there are entrepreneurs who have set up their own, you know, investment vehicles, and they are competition in Czech Republic because they have a lot of money. They have, you know, similar amount of capital as we do, if not more. And yet they're local and very often much more, I would say, flexible in terms of how they invest, whether it's a minority stake, whether it's less governance, whether, you know, the valuation is structured in a different way. So although Czech Republic is a huge powerhouse in terms of the economy of Central Europe, we used to invest a lot in Czech Republic. These days, I would say Czech Republic in terms of private equity is punching a little bit below its weight.
Right. So it can handle itself in terms of finance.
It can handle itself still. You know, last year we did one investment in Czech Republic. It's not that it's, you know, it's not there. It's just like it's a relatively large economy. While, for example, some others like Romania, I mentioned, is coming up. Poland continues to be a big source of investment. The Baltic countries are interesting. You know, you basically have a region that has, you know, four larger economies with their own currency still, although they're all in the EU, they're all in Schengen. And this is Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary, and Romania. And then you have six countries that are smaller countries, all in, you know, the EU, in Schengen, and the Eurozone. These are the three Baltic countries, Slovakia and Slovenia and Croatia. So very integrated region into the EU.
Great. Well, it's a fascinating journey you've been on the last 25 years, and good luck with what comes next. Thanks very much for joining me on Fundshack.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Fundshack podcast. If you like what you've heard, click follow on whichever platform you're listening or watching on, and visit us directly at fund-shack.com. It's got a treasure trove of private capital insights. Thanks for listening.